right now is Mike Ozanian. Mike is a sports business reporter for CNBC. We had Mike on the show multiple times during the sale process of our football team during that year and a half. And he was always incredibly helpful and interesting. And I read what Mike put together with CNBC this morning, ranking sports empires, the top 20 in the world for the year 2025. And I thought this was an interesting topic for a number of reasons, and Mike joins us right now. First of all, before we get to some of these individual, you know, empires, two of which, by the way, are run by two local sports owners here in D.C., this is, right, not a list about the wealthiest of owners, but the richest portfolios of sports teams owned. Just explain what this list is, even beyond that, and certainly add to that if I didn't get it right.
No, Kevin, you got it exactly right. What this list does, it takes those individuals or companies, and we analyze and value the sports portfolio of all their teams and sports-related businesses. To qualify for the list, though, you have to be a controlling owner of at least one sports team worth $1 billion or more. So, for example, TKO Holdings, which is the publicly traded vehicle for which WWE and UFC, the Mixed Martial Arts Enterprise, trade on the stock exchange, is not eligible for the list, even though it has a valuation above $15 billion. That's because there's no sports team involved. So the reason why we looked at this and have done this at CNBC is because over the last few years, there's been a trend of people owning more than one sports team, as well as a lot of different types of sports assets that they can utilize with their sports team holdings. Those sports team properties could be things like a regional sports network, such as the case with the Yankee Global Enterprises and the YES Network, or Ted Leonsis and his regional sports network. It could be something like Legends, which is the stadium hospitality and premium seating business that Jerry Jones owns a stake in and the New York Yankees own a stake in. And this trend is happening because when I talk to sports team owners and those involved with these empires, they say there's tremendous scale.
Right.
Meaning,
sure,
you can cross market and sell sponsorships to different teams. You know, we just saw, for example, the WNBA announce three new franchises over the next couple of years. Those are being taken in by teams that already own NBA teams and have operating rights to their arenas so they can maximize the revenue streams there. And when you look at sales, minority interest sales of sports empires over the last several months, you could see the very high valuations. So, for example, Stephen Ross sold a minority stake in a bundle of assets that included the Dolphins, Hard Rock Cafe, and the F1 race that he has down there every year. You also had a minority stake sale in Monumental Sports and Entertainment that went for a very high valuation. And just the other day, Rogers, which owned about 37% of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, which owns the Maple Leafs, the Raptors, the building, Toronto FC, which is the MLS team, they just bought out BCE, which owned about 37% of Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. So Rogers is going to have the ability to use their controlling ownership of that to put it on TV, to market, all of that stuff. And this is the way the sports world is really evolving right now.
Yeah, interesting. And you know, when you said about the cross-marketing opportunities for each of, you know, the Empire's portfolio companies or portfolio teams, actually, although they're not all teams, some of them are, you know, associated businesses, as you described. But I thought about, you know, the roll-up days. I'm sure you're very familiar with, you know, the rolling up of, you know, kind of fragmented businesses into one big company, where not only did you get those marketing economies of scale, but you got a lot of that, you know, HR and accounting and a lot of these, you know, functions that are necessary within a company all centralized to gain huge economies of scale. So I would imagine that that's a big part of it as well. You know, in sort of the gains, the positives that emerge from owning multiple, you know, sports properties because they're similar businesses.
Yeah, no, Kevin, you're exactly right. You know, and when you think about it, right, you look at the people that have been increasingly investing in sports teams and sports properties, especially now that private equity has been getting right. involved the last few years. These guys know all about what you're talking about. They've been doing that by investing in all their other businesses over the years. So, you know, I could triple the value of my sports portfolio by, you know, adding multiple teams, by adding investments in, you know, like the Kraft family. You know, they have an analytics business, which is immensely popular and big. You know, there's AEG, which has AXS, a huge sports ticketing business. They can get that economies of scale that you're talking about because I'm tripling the size of my portfolio,
right.
but I'm not tripling the size of my accounting department or human resources department or, you know, marketing department.
Right. Yeah. Do you think, you know, you talked about Stephen Ross. Do you think that in the future we will see sales of empires, you know, multiple holdings of, you know, Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment or Fenway versus just one-off purchases of teams or individual, you know, entities within the empire or within the portfolio?
I think that's possible, but I think what we're going to see first over the next several years is the folks who own these empires selling small pieces of them, you know, 5%, 10%, things like that. So, you know, for instance, let's take a look at Mark Walter, right? So, you know, he came in several years ago and with his group and bought the Dodgers, right? And then after that, he brought in a lot of minority investors buying small pieces.
Right.
You know, that also gives you capital. He built up the brand. He got a winning team. Then he brings in minority investors who want to be part of that winning brand and winning team, especially in a market like L.A. You know, now he's a minority investor in the L.A. Lakers, but he's got an agreement from Jeannie Buss to buy out her controlling stake in it. So he's going to be suddenly, you know, one of the bigger sports empires when this deal closes, because besides the Dodgers and the Lakers, he's an investor with Todd Boehly in Chelsea FC. He's an investor in Women's Ice Hockey League. You know, he's got an F1 investment. So, you know, he's building up this empire gradually, and then he can go to minority investors and say, hey, how would you like a piece of the tremendous
right.
scale and the economies
sure.
of, you know, that I've built up, and you don't got to go in and buy a piece here, a piece here, and a piece here. Just buy a piece of my holding company, and you're in.
Yeah, that makes sense. By the way, just on Mark Walter and the Lakers sale, how did that end up being a $10 billion valuation, Mike?
You know what? Nobody knows, but I will tell you this. He had a right of first refusal, and, you know, I don't know if the Jeannie Buss and her siblings said, we're going to go to market, you have first choice, and he said, what do I have to offer to get this team? And she threw out a number, and he said, okay. But remember, it is an impressive number, and, you know, you and I always like to talk valuations, right? So this comes out to like 18 or 19 times revenue,
yeah,
which is an insane multiple of revenue. But he's not buying the whole thing, right? He already owns 26, 27%, and she's going to maintain, after the deal, another 15 or 18%. So in terms of, like, his cash payment,
yeah, right,
it's
of course,
not like he's laying out $10 billion,
yeah,
you know? And also, I have to tell you, you know, I got to be honest, right? When he bought the Dodgers, I was one of those, you know, I said, $2 billion for the Dodgers. I said, that's crazy. You know, I was one of those, you know, but looking back at it all these years later, they're obviously worth way more than that right now. And he also has a unique advantage, we have to say. So, you know, to your point, why say $10 billion? You know, why do that? Well, if he can do that and cut off competition, he has great access to capital. He has ties with Guggenheim, which he used to help him get the Dodgers, financing that was a lot of hedge fund money, insurance money. And now he's recently started a new financial vehicle called TWG Global, which has also raised a lot of capital that's being put into sports. So he's very good at, and I want to be clear, I'm not saying there's anything nefarious or wrong with this, but he's very good at raising other people's money and using that to get his interest in sports teams. It's very smart.
I have a couple of questions related to two of the groups on your list, and I'll just let everybody know. Kroenke's number one, the Jones family, Jerry Jones, is number two, and then Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment, that's Josh Harris, you know, the managing partner of a 20-plus limited partner group that owns our football team along with his partner David Blitzer. They're third on the list, and Monumental Sports and Entertainment, Ted Leonsis, being the founder, owner, chairman, and manager, partner, is 19th on this list. I've suggested recently, and I just want to know if you think I'm completely off my rocker. So Washington's in a contract negotiation with their star wide receiver, Terry McLaurin. And it will be the first major contract in terms of cash outlay that they've done since acquiring the team. You know, a lot of one-year deals last year. The biggest deal so far in free agency this year was, you know, basically $30 million guaranteed over 3 years. This is going to be a $60, $70, $80 million guaranteed deal. And I've suggested recently, they paid $6 billion for the team less than 2 years ago, which they needed 20-plus limiteds to get done. They've put in approximately $100 million into the existing stadium just to bring it up to code so people don't, you know, get water dumped on them or have railings fall down. And they're about to, we think, end up being on the hook for $2.7 billion in what will be the new stadium on the RFK site in D.C. Hopefully that gets done here shortly. And I suggested that the McLaurin conversation, and by the way, they're going to have to pay Jaden Daniels an all-time contract in 2 years. It'll be the largest contract ever done in the history of the league, more likely than not, if he stays healthy, that they could be, as it relates to this football team on a P&L basis, cash strapped. Is that nuts?
I would suspect that given that you do have the cap, that cash strap would be probably, you know, I think not something, not that severe. I don't think so, because I think that, look, they're going to be getting more money every year from the national TV deal.
Yep.
I think that's going to help them. I think one of the questions will be also is, you mentioned the new stadium. Like, they finally got the arena situation squared away with the Sixers, right? So they're just basically going to get a much better lease.
Right. So, he walked away from the downtown thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And to be fair, and Ted Leonsis went through the same thing.
Sure.
I mean, the politics, and I'm not taking sides, like, of you know, should private money, should it be all be private money, or what if any, should be the public contribution. All that aside, the politics down there for new stadiums is really tough, either way you look at it. So I think that one thing that's possible, and I'm saying this is my idea, I just want to make it clear that I didn't speak to them, but you could also have a situation where you bring in new investors for the state football stadium. So, you know, the A's in baseball, the Athletics, have done that with their state new stadium that's going to be built
right
in Las Vegas. So there are ways to sort of separate the various assets from a legal standpoint. So, for example, you could set up something called New Stadium Co., and that could be something where there are individuals, perhaps, that are not owners of the Washington Commanders football franchise
sure.
that are investors in the new stadium.
Right.
You know, I just think I agree with you on one thing. I mean, if the main point is this isn't going to be easy, yeah, it isn't. And if you talk about guaranteeing contracts, as you know, the amount that you're not paying out in the current year, the future years, you have to put in escrow.
Exactly.
So you've got to put money there, which is going to make it tough. But the other thing is, he knew going in that he was going to need this new stadium. You know, I mean, in the back of his mind, the calculus was, okay, I'm paying $6 billion for the football team. I'm going to have to pump money into the current stadium to make it viable, and also a lot of money, private money, into a new stadium down the road. So I think all that was part of the calculus. And like I said, when you're in this world of private equity, like these guys are, they know how to raise money. The NFL does also allow, even though they have a $800 million or $850 million debt limit on the team,
right?
They do allow exceptions for stadiums. So there's also ways to borrow money
right.
and to be able to put that on the stadium too. So I don't know. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but I think they'll come out of this fine. And most of all, and it hurts me to say this as a New York Giants fan for, you know, 60 years, he is doing, you know, the Washington football franchise is a huge fan base, and territorially is one of the larger ones in the NFL. So he's got a great franchise, you know, to build on, and a brand that, you know, is on the mend from that perspective. But no, you know, I get your point. It's not going to be easy.
Yeah, I know you got to run, but I got two more for you real quickly. Number one is this. What's the, of the four major professional sports, which sport generates the highest margins?
You know, football, the NFL, the NBA, and the NHL are all about 20% or so on an EBITDA margin.
Yep.
Baseball's much lower, and you know, the reason for that, obviously, is that, you know, baseball has no cap. They have the luxury tax. Hockey has the hardest cap, the NHL. And then I would say following them is the NFL, then the NBA, and then baseball. The weird thing about baseball, though, is although I think their margin's about 15% or 12% or something like that, you know, it's because of the no cap, it's really skewed. So you have teams
sure.
like, you know, the Mets, like, lost $300 million or something.
Yeah.
You know, but and then you have some of the lowest revenue teams that because of revenue sharing and you know, the formula they use and the fact that, like, the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Red Sox got to write these big checks to, like, Tampa and, you know, Kansas City and those teams actually will make money.
Yeah.
So it's kind of screwy.
Well, but you probably just answered my last question, which is, you know, we're going through, you know, a rough stretch for our baseball team here owned by the Lerners. And they had it for sale, you know, a year ago. They wanted $2 billion plus, you know, and you see the Lakers valued, and I understand that Mark Walter's not buying $10 billion worth of Lakers stock, but, you know, the Nats can't even sell a baseball franchise franchise for $2 billion. And we've seen it. Artie Moreno pulled the sale of the Angels, you know, a year or two ago. And I guess you just answered the question. The no cap in baseball, does it depress valuations for teams?
I think it depends on the franchise.
True.
I think what happened with the Nationals, I think they asked too much. I mean, they were out there. The learners were told, and I was told this by people who knew the deal, that they could sell the team for at least $2.5 billion. So they came out asking way too much, especially at that time. The whole thing with Masson hadn't been settled.
Right.
So it was just too big a check to write for somebody to see. And there were interest people, but it was so frustrating at the time because the asking price was way too high. And then we saw the Orioles sell for like a little over $1.7 billion. So you can see that 2.6, you know, was way, way, way too high. The Angels with Artie was different. They definitely had people that were going to pay a high price for that team. I think it was well over $2 billion. But he himself, what happened with Artie was he was trying to get that new ballpark and trying to work something out with the city. And, you know, he wanted the city to throw in land, and he was going to build like one of these, you know, mixed-use areas and all that. And he really... It really soured his stomach on terms of ownership because of the way he was portrayed in the press out there over that. And so he had a moment where he was fed up and he said, I'm out of here. And then at the last minute, after there were some people who had come, visited the ballpark, you know, even walked around the locker room and wanted to buy it. And then he was like, you know what, he really changed his mind. It wasn't a question with him that he couldn't sell it. He just had a change of heart.
Did Snyder?
That I know.
Snyder get a good deal?
I think he did.
Yeah.
I think he did.
In the moment.
The circumstances. Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. I absolutely think he did.
Thanks for doing this, as always. Hope you're well. At Mike Ozanian, Ozanian on X on Twitter. Appreciate it. And the story is a good read if you're interested in this stuff. CNBC's Most Valuable Sports Empires in 2025. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Kevin. Always enjoy it, pal.
Mike Ozanian, everybody. Up next, Mike Rizzo has written his goodbye to the Nats fan base, and he's added a gift to go with it. More on that when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, and the Team980.com.
All right, here's what's trending on this Friday, July 11th. Happy 7-Eleven to all. Like I said in the previous, it is free Slurpee Day. Make sure you get your free Slurpees today at 7-Eleven. Wimbledon action going on right now. Men's semifinal just wrapped up. Spain's number 2 overall, Carlos Alcaraz, defeats the American Taylor Fritz in three sets to one. He will face the winner coming up against Jannik Sinner, who is taking on the legendary Serb Novak Djokovic. And the Home Run Derby participants have been finalized. Ronald Acuna Jr., Byron Buxton, Junior Caminero, O'Neill Cruz, Kyle Raleigh, Brent Rooker, James Wood, and Jazz Chisholm rounds out the field last night. The Home Run Derby will take place on Monday. The Mystics, they got the win last night over the Las Vegas Aces after erasing a 15-point deficit and battling down the stretch. The Mystics win 70-68. And the Wizards Summer League debut tonight at 9 p.m. They will take on the Phoenix Suns. The Nats, they wrap up their series in St. Louis. They fall to the Cardinals by a score of 8-1. A rough outing for Michael Soroka as he threw 91 pitches through just 4 innings. And the Nats kick off their series tonight against the Brewers. First pitch is at 8:10. Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 7:40. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the streams and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.